have an elevator ride to tell me why I should choose and work with you and you only.
He spent the last 20 plus years helping contractors systemize their companies.
My whole goal in life was to move from commodity to niche. And so that's why I got so practiced at it.
Al Levy is a third generation contractor turned consultant, author, and creator of the 7-Power Framework.
What I call the 7 Powers: planning, operations, staffing, sales, sales coaching, marketing, and finance.
This conversation is packed with wisdom for someone who's behind the scenes.
None of your marketing will ever be as effective as it could be unless you have customer testimonies. That is a fact.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Today's guest is someone who has quietly shaped some of the biggest names in the home services space, including Tommy Mello from A1 Garage, and his impact in the industry is massive. Al Levy is a third-generation contractor turned consultant, author, and creator of the 7-Power Framework. After decades of running and growing his family's plumbing, heating, and electrical business in New York, he spent the last 20-plus years helping contractors systemize their companies so they can scale, profit, and actually have a life outside the business. In this episode, Al and I dive into why every contractor must act as their own marketing manager, how to build systems that stop your team from blowing up your marketing, the truth about AI as another tool in the toolbox, and why acquisitions plus organic growth create exponential results. Whether you're running a $1 million shop or you're chasing $50 million a year, this conversation is packed with wisdom for someone who's behind the scenes, helping companies like A1 Garage reach the very top. You don't want to miss this one. Welcome to the show, Al Levy. Very excited to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you jumping on. I'm really excited to talk to you. I've done a lot of research about your company, your history, and just want to get right to it. I know you have a lot of wisdom to share, right, that I think would help a lot of our contractors understand really the whole aspect, not really just sales and marketing, but also operations and your 7-Power. Very important to understand. So just to get started, what do you think a contractor should have in place, right, before hiring a marketing agency? What are the things they need to have in place before hiring a marketing agency?
Yeah, so just very little bit of my story that, you know, is I was great at sales and marketing at my company, and my team was really great at blowing up all those efforts. And so that's why I became so good at operations, staffing, and things of that nature. But when I worked with my clients for 20-something years, one-to-one, and then I put the programs online and such, to me, the success of marketing, my guru marketing guy was a guy on Fifth Avenue in New York City, which, if you know, in the old days, that was really big. So the story to behind this is always good to start with the story is I was at a Super Bowl party, and there were two people arguing with each other who had the best heating company. And the bad news is they both used me, but neither one knew. So I went home and told the next day my dad and my brother about what had gone on, because we had grown up as we were acquiring companies, keeping the name, figuring they wanted to stay doing business with the name. And I will tell you, one of the mistakes of this is this house of brand thing and stuff is it's very hard to keep it all together. It's not clear in a customer's head. Anyway, so I'm explaining what happens. And as I'm talking, my dad reaches for the phone. And I go, I'm sorry, what are you doing? He goes, I'm going to call somebody and we're going to fix this. I go, who? He goes, you'll find out. And so this guy's name, marketing guru, his name was Leo. And I tell it actually in the book and a lot of other places about the. He basically, as a young man, put me on his knee and go, Sonny, this is how we do marketing. But, you know, I said to my dad, I said, why would this guy, you know, on Madison Avenue take your call? And he said, because when I was young and he was young, he had a disability. And I was the only one who was nice to him, and he never forgot. And sure enough, when I called, and one of the conditions that he made, Leo, was that to my dad said, you have to give me one of your three sons to be to understudy what I'm doing and to implement what I have to say. And so that was really the beginning for us of a marketing manager. And in my org chart, marketing manager on the box org chart, it is always filled by the owner. Listen to what I said. Always by the owner. And the person who worked with me for many years and still great friends, Ellen Rohr, who's a financial queen in the industry of home service, far and wide. And we actually were partners in Zoom Drain with our customer. But one of the big things that he impressed upon me that is, if I don't know my ideal customer, and if I wouldn't be able to clone them, then and I don't know what makes them tick, and I don't know what makes them want to buy from me. And he talked about this, what I had never heard. This was new back then. This is, I'm going to say, 3 decades ago. He's explained to me that if I come in an elevator on the top floor and I look over and go 7 Power Contractor, you have an elevator ride to tell me why I should choose and work with you and you only. And that's how well you must know your target audience. Because if you can't sell and know what makes one person tick, how do you sell to 10, 100, 1,000, a million of them? You can't. So we blame our marketing company because they're supposed to be mind readers and they are not. We as owners have to define this stuff. And that's what I always help them put together is a marketing plan in writing. And it covers ideal customer, target audience. And you know, this myth that I had before I worked with Leo, anybody could be our customer. And I'm here to tell you today, no, they can't. Because you need to be focused on what audience you can service really well. Who's going to give you the gross sales you want, the profits you want, you know, the people you want to do business with, the services you can provide uniquely, what separates you. Now, I was born into a business that was a commodity, and my whole goal in life was to move from commodity to niche. And so that's why I got so practiced at it. And when we worked together, Ellen and I, we insisted that the owner be a marketing manager, because if they had a marketing plan, which does the 3 big things, Mauricio, one is it has the marketing budget. Typically, it's a percentage of sales. And it's, this is just ballpark. Don't freak out. Rule of thumb is 10% of gross sales. So if you did $1 million last year, just to pick a number, $100,000 would be in marketing for next year. And if you want to grow to $4 million, then $400,000. This is a rule of thumb. That's where you start to put your toe into becoming aggressive. If you think you don't have to put any money in marketing, be aware people get sick, die, move, quit. All those reasons, you have to be putting marketing. And really, the best way I think to think of this is, how far can you drive with a gasoline tank that's empty? So marketing budget is the first thing that you must do. Then the second thing you must do is have marketing allocation, which is a fancy way of saying, how do I go to market? There are only, what, 1 billion ways I can go to market? You know, PPC, LSA, you know, TMB. There's 1 million things that you can do, some free, not some. Lawn signs, truck design, you know, what? I can't push a shopping cart down an aisle and not have marketing confronting me the whole way. So there's 1 million ways. But if you try to do everything, consider it as buckshot versus what really good marketing is, rifle shot. That's what you're going for. And you won't know until you plug things back. So you're looking for gross sales and gross profit. Some items will have a very high ROI, but they won't produce enough gross sales. Some will have a low ROI, but they will produce gross sales. So it's a blend of those things. But the goal is, what are the 3 marketing drivers? So direct mail, postcard, let's just pick one, or radio campaign or billboard campaign, whatever that is. Those would be 3 that would get the majority, not everything, but the majority of your time, energy, and money. And then you measure. No guessing as to what's going on. That's really a big, big part of it. Here's the last of the 3 big things. There were times when things would go dead and I would literally pick up the phone wondering if my phone was broken. And so many other contractors laughed because they've had the same experience. And that was because we were crazy, crazy busy. So we never bothered to market, and now they're dead. So I learned from Leo is that you need to create a marketing calendar where its marketing calendar is driven backwards through the year. So as you come into 2026, you're already populating the calendar. Here's a good example. None of your marketing will ever be as effective as it could be unless you have customer testimonials. That is a fact. Because as I was explained, what I say is semi-interesting to customers, but what they really want to hear is a customer who looks like them, lives near where they are, doing one of the 3 things, bragging about what great product and service you provided that they love, or they're bragging about what great service you provide, answering the phones, you're nice, you're clean, you're neat, whatever it is. And then I talk about the 3rd type of testimonial. That's a home run, which is great product and service, love dealing with you, never think of anybody else. And today, of course, video is very powerful and very necessary. But direct mail postcards that are oversized, that are mailed over and over again, they have never stopped working. They work today, but they only work if you do it right.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there that you said. And I want to start first with our org chart you said, you mentioned the importance of having the owner be the marketing manager, right? I talk with a lot of contractors and here's the comment center. I'll walk you through what kind of the conversation sometimes I have, right? A lot of times they put an office assistant, a sales manager, or some other person in charge of actually hiring a marketing agency sometimes. And sometimes even the owner, and I'm talking about sometimes even smaller companies like 3 to 4 million, 5 million, whatever. What I tell them is that's not, you can't do that. It's too important not to do that. You can't outsource your thinking with marketing. You can delegate it, right? But you can't outsource the strategy. As an owner, you have to be in charge of that.
I so agree about this because it's actually the same thing when I worked one-to-one with clients. I worked with one-to-one clients for 20 years after I'd left my own business that I had worked in 26 full-time years. The problem when I would go, the big owners thought they were too busy and other things I needed to do. And I'd work with the managers and then we'd come up with, you know, doing whatever system we were rolling out. And then the owner would show up later on and go, well, who authorized this? And now the manager's legs were shot out from underneath them. So at the, you know, quickly I learned no more. If the owner's not involved, I'm not going to be involved.
Yeah. And that's a big thing. So the lesson here, you have to be involved. That's basically it.
It's like in their own self-interest. That's what they have to know, Mauricio. Any good marketing company needs to know, look, you don't have to do the work. They're thinking that they're going to make the call as to what radio things are going to be. They're not going to be looking at 3 frequency or any of the other metrics and the rest of it. But they need to be able to express, here's how I'm going to judge you, the marketing company. Here's what I'm going to provide for you so that you can reach your success, which benefits you and benefits me. And if it works out, I'm happy to be a testimonial to your marketing company.
Yeah. Yeah. You also mentioned the importance of not being a commodity, right? At the end of the day, like if you really think about what you do, you know, heating and HVAC, plumbing, contracting, home services, there's really over like, maybe, I don't know, 500,000 of those companies in the US just alone, probably a million worldwide. In reality, you are a commodity. Our business is a commodity, but you can't be seen, perceived as a commodity, right? Talk about how contractor can stand out in a crowded marketplace and not being seen as a commodity, because then you could charge higher prices, right?
Yes, and that really does start with branding, and how you get branded and perceived is really big. So Leo, again, I talked about all these company and brands, and we had all these different names, and our truck looked like a circus wagon with all the stuff all over it. You couldn't read anything. And so he stripped it all off and just got down to, I gave him a chart to show him what color green we had to do for fuel oil heating in New York City. They required the truck to be green. Why? I don't know, but they did. And I show him the chart and I figure he's going to get like a forest green or something like that. And he picks a green out that is the most obnoxious green that I've ever seen. And I start going, you can't be doing that. And he goes, listen, Al, first of all, trust Leo. Second of all, I'm not asking you to wear a suit this color, but here's what I promise you. When we do this, they're going to see your trucks 5 blocks away. And as I speak today, I can tell you, whenever I'm back in Long Island at my family's area, I can see my trucks, and I am not looking for them, 5 blocks away. My competitors called up and asked me, why are there so many new trucks on the road from you guys? And the answer was, of course there weren't new trucks. They were just branded. We took away the rest of it, really clear identity, and then we changed ourselves. Now, I will tell you, I'd love to say it was because we were enlightened. We had a really good competitor in our market. And my dad had an expression, bless your competition, because they'll make you better. Which, as a young man, I was not very interested in hearing. But of course he was right. So they caused us to get dressed professional. They caused us to clean up our act, both in the way we approached the house and where we put shoe covers on. All the stuff you take for granted now, none of this was common 30 years ago. We drug tested. Criminal background. So we did the things that we looked at our competition and go, if we were a homeowner, would we see a value to this? And the answer is, of course, yes. And so we created, and everyone who's listening here, the best thing that you can do, and what I did with my clients when I did Marketing Power, is come up with the 10 reasons to choose you. So the ones that I always use is, listen, it doesn't matter if Al comes, Mauricio comes, Frank comes, We all do it pretty much the same way because we have one-of-a-kind operating manuals that detail how we do our work. So we're always following it to minimize mistakes, which is bad for you and bad for the company. And if there's a problem, when we come back, we're already far down the line to make sure it's right. Number two is we're not coming to your home to practice like other companies do and getting paid while you're learning on the job. We are trained in our own hands-on training center so that we are experts at whatever work we do. And so that's why number three is we have the industry-leading warranty on any work that we do. We are criminal background. We are drug test. You know, so I just go right down the list. All of those were benefits. And I wrote the benefits to my wife because my wife was like the ideal customer. And when I have questions about that, I would ask her. And then I would test her. I would go ask your friends if this is important. And when I would get the answer back, it was great. One of the funny things, which isn't marketing, but it's sales. I said to my wife, probably the late 90s, I go, how much money would you spend with a technician that came to your house? She goes, $2,500. I said, wow, okay, well, why wouldn't you spend more? She goes, I want somebody that's dressed professionally and I want them to come here and spend some time and engineer whatever it is if I'm going to spend more money than that. And then I asked her, well, would you make any difference if it's from the same company? She goes, no. I go, great. Ask all your friends. And the answer came back exactly the same thing. So we always converted at a very high level. Understand that sales and marketing are like two sides of the coin. So another story talking about Ellen Rohr, the great financial queen, she and I would be driving and I was the one driving and she was in the passenger seat asking me questions or just seeing if she could annoy me while I was driving. So she looks over at me and she goes, what comes first, sales or marketing? And I said, sales. And she goes, well, you know, if you're not great at marketing, the phone doesn't ring, you're going out of business. I said, if you can't sell to one person, 10 people, like I said before, your marketing is going to be awful. It's just the truth of it, because you don't have any way to differentiate yourself. You don't have any way to set up. So sales and marketing together is really very critical. It's ham and egg, whatever you want to use as a description, but two sides of the coin and understand that. And the understanding that the owner has to do is what makes their customer tick. And how can you stand out in front of them? And the answer is, really, when I taught sales power, I told the techs, my techs originally, I said, I wish you had to be great. You just have to be good, because if you're good, we're going to kick everyone else's derriere all over the place, because that's how bad the competition is. Now, today, competition's better, but there's still these gaps that we come into. And it's easy to differentiate yourself in the marketplace and move yourself to niche, because the last place you want to be is commodity.
Yeah, a lot to say. Basically, the first thing you have to do is understand your target audience, understand your customers. That's a big thing, right? Understanding your customers, understanding the psychographics, demographics of them, right? You talked about the demographics was with your wife, which is your target audience, right? And you talked about maybe some of the psychographics, some of the things, their characteristics they're looking at. So first thing is understanding that, writing it down, right? The 10 things you talked about, 10 benefits about working with your company. And a big thing I like to say is just having empathy, right? Would you hire yourself, right? Would you hire, if you're a homeowner, would you hire that company?
Like, that's a great, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Would your friends and neighbors and, you know, I always use the test of, would your friends, neighbors, and house of worship use you and tell everyone else they know that they must use you? That's when you know you're in the right zone.
Yeah, yeah, that's important to understand. And you said this last time when we spoke, right? You said that really marketing, the mechanisms have changed, but really marketing hasn't changed. And I agree with you 100%. It's just finding where your customers are, right? And then creating a strategy that attracts them, right? And that's kind of like the big thing that people are doing. You know, overall, like how has that changed in the last, you said obviously this is it's a fourth generation business. How has that changed the last 10 years? I'm sure it's changed a lot the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, the principles, I know everybody looking for, it's got to be more complicated. That's part of the problem. We as contractors think, well, it can't be that easy. It's got to be more complicated than what you're talking about. It is and it isn't. If you don't create the marketing plan in writing, and you know, obviously digital is where you would create it these days so you can share it, but it's still the same thing. You have to create the same elements in that marketing plan. That marketing plan is in place at companies that were small and grew to companies that were so big that private equity money, PE money, showed up and bought them out. I have not one or two. I have dozens of them that have gone to be because they're so attractive. Now, they're also attractive because they mastered what I call the seven powers. And there's a reason that I wear the shirt seven powers, because there's seven powers that you have to master. Planning, operations, staffing, sales coaching, marketing, and finance. And so it's the blend of these things. They're systems. And when you have systems, it's like putting a great foundation under your company, whatever size it is today. Because I worked with very small companies, a million in sales. People worked really hard, but they ran out of hours in a day, days in a week, weeks in a month. They couldn't clone themselves, and they needed systems to scale. And then I worked with some great marketers who already knew how to make the phone ring. The problem, Mauricio, is every time the phone ring, it would be like gasoline on a fire because they couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle answering the phones. They couldn't handle dispatching the calls. They couldn't handle getting the texts out there and knowing what to do. All of that was a mess. So the same systems, the org charts and the manuals that cover the boxes, is a very giant step in the right direction. And then, of course, we got tired of hiring industry retreads. Our company had started out of my grandfather's gas station in 36. My dad and my uncle, when they got back from World War II, got very busy pirating away people from other companies, and we were a union shop, and they would show up, and you know, by the time my brothers and I arrived, we inherited these guys. And you don't get the tech you want. In other words, if they have skills already and you're going to think you're going to take a shortcut and hire them in, and by stealing them from somebody else, and the way you do that is by paying them more money, right? And if you pay them more money to come join you, well, then when anybody else offers them more money, they're going to dollar hop their way away. And so you're back in the same boat. Ultimately, in the 80s, we decided we're going to build our own pipeline. And then certainly in the 90s, once we had the manuals and the rest of it, we took the manuals, learned how to become better trainers ourselves, and built the right hands-on training center, because all training centers are not equal. And we taught the skills of sales, operation, technical to our service techs, and communication, operation, technical to our installers, so that they could be excellent here, so that they could be really good out in the field.
Yeah, that's great. You have one of the most important things that a contractor needs to have in place, because you talked about this briefly, but in terms of technical, you said the training, what is the things they need to have in place in order, like if they don't want to waste money, right? If they don't want to have gasoline in the fire, like you just said, what are the things they need to have in place in terms of training that before actually putting gasoline in the fire?
I would say one of the myths that's really, I would love to see destroyed and out in the industry is, oh, when I get bigger, I'll need a box org chart. And they don't understand, Mauricio, that not having the box org chart immediately is forcing you to be small or creating chaos, because it's either one person's job or two people's job or nobody's job. So the scenario that I always talk about, in air conditioning, there's occasions where you have to get a crane to put it up, the unit up on the roof. So since it was nobody's job, Mauricio, would you like to guess on any given day how many cranes would be at a job?
Dozens. Zero.
Zero or two. Both are bad scenarios. So once we define the boxes and what goes on in the boxes for the 80%, not the weird 20, it became clear whose job it is. And then we did a depth chart, which is a save as. And if you ever watched a football game, if the center gets hurt, we don't stop playing football. The next guy goes in who's trained in that position. And that's what we don't do. And even though you're small, the reality is small company has all of the boxes on my box org chart. And they need all of the manuals, and they don't think they do. But they don't realize all during the day, you're running from box to box to box. So even if a willing person with great skills showed up at your shop, they can't take a box away from you because there's no instruction kit. There's nothing to train them on. You follow?
Yeah. Yeah. And also just basically you have like a job, right, at that point, right? And it's okay if you're small, right? And you have, as an owner, you have several boxes. You're
going to wear a ton of hats, and that's normal. But with the box org chart, at least you know what hats you're wearing and which box you're in when you're doing which task. That is monstrously better.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things you mentioned like last time briefly was, obviously there's several ways to grow the business. There's actually three ways, right? But one of the ways that I want to talk about is actually through acquisitions. Like what are the lessons you learned from that? Because obviously you've gone through several acquisitions. What are the lessons you learned from that?
Well, yeah, we first started it again before my brothers and I showed up. We were in New York City and we were along the water and Urban Renewal came in and basically wiped out 8 miles of our territory. So our customers fled. And if my dad and uncle hadn't acquired company, followed where they were moving to, by the time my brothers and I showed up in the late 70s, early 80s, it would have been no business. But the happy accident of it is they found out and trained us as well, is that it's a great way to grow your company, to get some key people as well, and to fill in the holes that some marketing can't always do. So acquisition done right. Now, acquisition, if you're a small company, you're thinking, well, I'll wait till I'm big, I can do it. No, even a small company can acquire a company. You can buy somebody's phone number. What's an owner, operator, or single person going to do, chucking the truck? He's either going to have to close his door or work till he dies. That's the nature of it. So you can sell that number. He can come on board, work for a little while as a tech, and then just pay him as the jobs convert. There's a lot of ways. So acquisition really is a spectrum. And we used to say from mild to wild. We were a bigger company, so we were looking for companies that had 3 to 5 trucks as a minimum. But we also had one main hub and a bunch of satellite shops on Long Island because of drive time. And so we would drive out an hour to a call. There were no more calls. We'd drive all an hour back. And then another call would come in. We'd drive an hour. You see how stupid that is, right? So, and there was a place we wanted to be. So we would acquire a company. They had an office or a location and a nucleus of calls already. And then we would advertise around that, market around it, and then close the gap between the two. It's a great way to grow a company. So it's called organic marketing, which is whatever method you use, TV, radio, online, Facebook ads, whatever it is, and then acquisition. And it's really 1 + 1 = 4 if you can do both right.
Yeah. And what are some of the common mistakes you probably made? I'm sure you had a lot of mistakes and common challenges you had during that phase. Like, what are the mistakes?
In acquisition? Yeah. So we were in fuel oil heating. For those who don't know what fuel oil heating is, in the Northeast, heat homes, it's gone away a bit. And I could see the handwriting on the wall. And I realized that I had to get into plumbing, gas heating, air conditioning, and electric. First of all, because my customers kept asking. They loved us. Why can't you do my plumbing? Why can't you do it? So finally, we stopped learning to say no. But we had already mastered what it took to run our business. And we knew what we needed was a manual and then build onto the training center and becoming training curriculum. We could do it, which emboldened us. But instead of trying to do it by just pure marketing, I bought a fellow contractor who I had known for years. He had a small company and they were already in plumbing, gas heating, and air conditioning. So it was a good fit to our program with the nucleus of calls. We did a 3-year audit on their sales and he did not lie to me. But the reality is his sales after the first year or so were not anywhere near where we wanted it to be. And I would say my family has done probably 50 acquisitions through the years. And so what happened or bailed me out on this, first of all, it was a business I wanted to be in. So let's be very clear. I needed the expertise, which I got with this acquisition. I needed some techs who were already built that way. There were a bunch of good things that came of it. I made money in this deal because he had so much dead inventory that I turned into credits that it basically paid for the wholesale. So there's a million ways to win. Can you overpay for anything? Of course you can. It's like saying, could you overpay for a house? Yes. But if you're in it for the long haul, the likelihood is less. And so, yeah, you need to know where it fits on the spectrum. What are you seeking? Is it a new add-on business? Or is it to increase your business? Is it to improve billable hours? Is it an area where your ideal customers are and you don't have enough penetration in the market? Those are good things to do. And I've showed companies everywhere and anywhere. It takes patience. The way I explain it is you're probably going to have to try to talk to 10 companies actively to close one. Now, you might be better than that, but closing 1 out of 10, if done right, really makes a monstrous difference. And so when I tried to explain it to my one-to-one clients about this effort that they had to do and how to do the whole thing, because it was a program, I called it Acquisition Power. And one of the guys goes, you know, it's a lot of work to all these 10 customers. I go, I'm going to give you dating advice, but be aware I haven't been on a date because I've been married for 48 years. So if you want a date, make sure there isn't one woman that you're chasing or another significant other, however you are. But your point made is that you have to have a lot of irons in the fire. Otherwise, this deal is not going to come to pass. There was one company up in Maine. He wanted to acquire this company, offered a price. The rest of it, the guy said no. Never let it stop, which is what I told him. I go, the next move is always yours. He closed that deal 2 years later because he kept going back. Other people had come but never closed the deal. He got the deal even less than he wanted to pay originally.
It's amazing. That's amazing. And typically, how do you get financing for these deals?
Well, sometimes it can be owner financing. And of course, you bring a great point is the better you're financed and your ability to access to capital is great. What I try to explain is usually you don't show up with a briefcase full of money and go, here you go. It's usually paid out over 3 to 5 years. And on small companies, I'm not even giving them a briefcase. Like I mentioned, owner-operator, maybe one to two trucks. They're going to get paid a couple of dollars down. And then as the calls convert, they'll get a piece of those sales. So there's a lot of ways to do it.
So it just depends on the size of the deal, right?
Size of the company. Yeah. And it depends on your stature and your relationship with banks or other institutions as to what you want to do. But again, the thought is, well, it's $1 million sales. They're not getting a check for $1 million and that's it.
Yeah. This has become very popular. I don't know if you're on X or on Twitter. It's become very popular with a lot of people trying to buy businesses. And a lot of people are going into the, you know, HVAC and plumbing space from other industries buying a business. Hey,
you know why that is?
Why?
Because, I'll tell you why private equity happened is a little thing called COVID happened. And the PE money always wanted to buy restaurants and pizza chains and things like that because it was pretty simple and basic and that's what they wanted. Well, guess who suffered the most in COVID land? Those companies. And then they looked around and said, well, who's still busy? And especially during the building, you know, the house boom, they realized it was contractors. And we just kept cranking along, which is why there's so much money has flown to here. Now, that's also why there isn't anybody who doesn't get... I'm called a 7-power contractor. So every day I've got tons of emails and phone calls and people trying to acquire me. They don't understand that I'm not a contractor anymore. But yeah, that's very common. There are going to be more people. That's a little different. You have to understand if you really are in good situation, the better your company runs, the more attractive you are. So that's why so many of my clients who had put all the systems in place and the people that were acquiring knowing that they're not acquiring a job. They're acquiring a company that can run by itself. They don't need the guy to make it all work. You follow? That's more attractive.
Yeah, they're acquiring an asset, basically. If they've done right, it's acquiring an asset that potentially can grow and to actually we get a return on the investment, right?
Yep. So P is one of them, but also there's other companies. No, the acquisition's been around. It usually just rides a wave.
Yeah. You talked about creating a marketing manager manual. Obviously, you mentioned the importance of having the owner be involved. What should the manual have? Like, what is the actual things that the marketing manager should have?
So the marketing manager manual is basically the distilled version of the big marketing plan that I talked about, which has, you know, what is our way to market? You know, who's our target audience? What makes them tick? What are the statistics? So for us, it used to be homeowners. Typically, we were ideally looking for two people that went off to work before there was all work from home. And, you know, a certain amount of salary or dollar amount. It's much easier to do searches online to do all of this stuff these days. But then we would talk about where do those people live? What testimonials do we have? And then we would define in marketing about our budget. Then we would define the allocation. And then we would list the vendors for each of these things. And we would list the KPIs as to how we would judge those vendors. And I recommend if you can't get it down to 4 to 5 KPIs for the vendor that you are working with, you have not communicated to them in an effective way to know whether or not they're hitting the metrics or they are.
And what are the 4 or 5 KPIs that typically you would recommend?
So if you asked me for a 3 frequency on radio, I'm going to have a special coupon or a promotional thing, use this code so I can track it. Tracking is the big thing. So when it comes in, I know whether or not it really converted. I want X amount of gross sales with X amount of gross profit. And this is the audience that I want to have come instead of tire kickers or just interested in low price as an example. Those are 4 to 5 KPIs, I would say.
Got it. And then like on digital, like typically, my recommendation is typically like cost per lead, cost per booked appointment.
Yeah, cost per lead is a great one. Yeah. Ellen and I had a spreadsheet on that. Cost per lead is really, yeah, because you can make yourself go broke. Now, it is more competitive these days because the easy money is gone when everybody was calling you up and saying, how fast can you be here? And they were cutting you off when you were quoting the price because they just want to know how soon can you start. Those days are not here anymore because things slow down. And that's, again, understanding this goes in cycles. That's one of the advantages to listen to somebody who's been around for a while.
Let's talk about AI. You said AI is just another tool in the toolbox. What do contractors get wrong about AI? And how should they really be thinking about it?
I think, you know, at this stage, I want everyone to understand that, yes, I'm older, but I was, for some strange reason, I was around computers when I was about 14 or 15 years old, because in my high school, we had one of the first computers. And it's really kind of ridiculous because we were not in a very nice area. And I don't know who donated the computer back then, but I understood what computers were very early. Our company got computerized well before any of our competitors did. So we love technology, but the big thing is technology with a purpose. I'm not the, I don't want to be, you know, that's the graph, you know, of the first people who tried, the second people, and other people that have to wait 1,000 years till the end, till there's never a mistake. I don't recommend you be on either extreme. I recommend that you're in the middle somewhere where it's got a little traction, because the problem with AI today is it is delusional at times. But what it is, it's a great assistant. So it will get you to the baseball stadium you want to get to and a whole lot easier. But its chances of getting you to the right row and seat today are severely compromised. And so there's you that still has to check stuff. Having said that, they've gone out and got stuff, but if they don't have it, then they're going to make it up. And the second thing that they're now doing, if you've read any of the recent stuff, is that they get to know you. And they also tailor their answers to what they believe you want to hear. So our AI is already outsmarting us. It's going to be really good. I think AI is not as scary as all of us really think. And AI is not new. The day we stopped doing MapQuest paper and just punched into the two ways where we're going, AI existed. And as you know, if you know anything for this history, which is not that long, AI has become better and better and better. Is it a replacement for everything? No. So even like in my operating manuals, they are really the backbone. Can you augment with some AI stuff? Yes. Should you? Yes. Should you check that it's right? Absolutely. You must do that. AI is not a replacement for AL. That's me.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are the things that typically you would recommend? I think we talked about last time briefly. I think one of the ones was basically call center, right? Customer service, right? Customer service, call centers.
I think people would think they can just put them on AI, and customers are, it's not a huge delay, but they can already sense that you're talking to AI. Now, younger people are more tolerant of it. Some of them even like it. But if you only have AI and there's nobody that they can get to a live person, it's going to be a problem. And I still work with companies to this day, some of the large ones, and they will tell you the same thing, is their conversion rates. You know, it's really the thing I want to talk about marketing power before the thought escapes me. Marketing power was explained to me. The goal is to fill a bathtub with the right amount of calls from the right customer at the right time. And if you're any good, you're overflowing that bathtub with those three things. And the reason is, even though it's stressful, is if you have more calls than you can humanly do in a day, like we did, then you get to decide what you charge, you get to decide what work you do and don't do, and you get to decide who you work for. Now, the problem with that bathtub is if your CSRs are bad, then the drain is wide open. So in the box org chart, there's the marketing manager, and underneath them is the CSRs because of this bathtub scenario. Now, does that mean you can't have a marketing assistant and can't have a lead CSR or CSM, customer service manager? As you grow, absolutely you can. Do you need as many CSRs as you once did? Probably not. Do you need no CSRs? Absolutely not, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that's very important. You're trying to get to the bathtub overflowing. That's kind of like the image I want you guys to picture, is that analogy, right? And obviously, it's going to take marketing effort, and you need a lot of leads, right, to come in, a lot of inbound leads for that to happen.
And you need to be able to capture them, because guess who they blame? The marketing company. And the marketing company, especially in ServiceTitan or other great software, goes, the calls came in, you dropped the ball. Your CSRs couldn't handle it. Dispatcher wasn't organized. Tech got there and blew the call.
Yeah, yeah. And that's very typical. So having that as you said, you mentioned earlier, important to having that overflow. And you said 10% of top line of marketing should be spent on.
Yeah, these are rule of thumbs that have been good for a very long time. 10% of sales is where you first hit aggressive marketing. One of the things that I do want to go back to, Mauricio, is if I get great looking truck wraps on the right kind of trucks, which are trucks you can stand up, which is very important for a million reasons. Techs work better. You have a better chance of having the stuff you need. So working out of vans and stuff, we did away with way before. And so for a couple of reasons we did it, but they're basically rolling billboards, and they're rolling billboards in the neighborhoods we want to be in. So there's a lot of value. So the question here is, from a financial standpoint, is truck wraps a truck expense or a marketing expense? And the great answer, of course, is it depends. So in my particular case, I think of it as a marketing expense. It needs to be replaced, but it has a longer life. It isn't like you sent out postcards and now they're gone. or whatever other advertising, and now it's gone. So if you have a great truck design or great brand, and you have enough of these trucks and they really stand out, like I talked about our truck stand out, that goes a long way. And the point of this is, whatever you determine that is marketing, it will be marketing from now to forever, because that can't be moving and shifting, if you follow what I'm saying. And so that's in your 10%. 4% is what I was talking about, just to replace customers. You need to figure about 4% of, so if you're a million, it's $40,000 is going to go into it. And then you need to decide what is a marketing expense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. I mean, and that's from the contractors, or many contractors I work with, I think they say the actual, of all the marketing channels, besides email marketing, they say that actually having the truck rep is actually probably the best channel, because it's a one-time cost and it brings new customers for years, right?
Yeah, it does. And your branding everywhere, you know, that was the other thing. When we changed our name and we were ready to come back out, Leo said to us, we're going to do burst marketing. And I go, what is burst marketing? So at that time, he was talking about Purdue Chicken. He goes, you know Purdue Chicken? I go, sure I do. The commercials are everywhere. He goes, in fact, they haven't run a commercial in 5 years, but they saturated the marketplace and got in your head. So we're going to be at the train station. We're going to be on billboards. We're going to be on buses. We're going to be everywhere. And that was what he meant by a burst. Can't sustain it forever, but we were going to get into people's brains and then tailor back and continue the marketing as we go.
Yeah. Also, too, think about today. Like today, people are bombarded with so many messages. So it's even harder for people to get someone's attention.
Yes. Which goes to, again, branding. I'll give you one tip that I learned a long time ago. Well, because I before Dan Antonelli arrived, who's the best at this branding and truck design, I used to work with a company and I would help them design. I had a background in industrial design, which I never practiced. I have also had it worked as a mechanical engineer, got my degree, and never worked a day in my life. I was working in the field as a tech or as a salesperson at my own company. But those skills helped me get them to do the same thing that I had learned, is color attracts. I know your name. I know what you do. Anything else you put in there makes your design worse, not better. Worse. And if you love it right away, you went too safe. Remember I said it's got to be in your face to get my attention? That's really what you want to be able to do with the design. And then your lawn signs everywhere. Everything you mail has the stuff. Everything you put out on your website's the same. Power of branding around a great design is super powerful. It doesn't take away from anything I said. It just makes every direct mail piece you send better. Everything you do online, better. Every Facebook ad you make, better. All of it is better. And if you want one more step, remember what I said earlier, testimonials. And what I used to drill into my customers and anyone that's in my online programs when I talk to them is, can you ever have enough testimonials? No, no, you cannot.
Yeah. So testimonials. So what do you recommend? Do you follow, do you have the clients have a script for the testimonials?
Yeah, the service techs we trained in Sales Power how to ask for, you know, while they loved you and you took them out of their pain, water was flowing off the bathtub, their company's over and the house is 12 degrees inside, or it's 100 degrees, you follow? That's the time to capture a video and testimonial. And some guys say, you know, if I've done an excellent job, let me know if I haven't, because whatever it takes, I will do right now. But if I have, I want to reach more customers just like you. Would you mind doing a short video testimonial with me? And the best of them are really good at doing that. I had built into, because I did both service tech work and also install, even though we were not a small company, I sold the big tickets as well. And one of the things is I built testimonials to show, right, Hanley? I didn't even wait for an objection. I showed customers right away the level of work, what's going to go on, so they knew. And so my sales rate of closing was much higher than anybody else. I built into my testimonial as Mauricio, thank you so much for considering us. If I'm lucky enough to be chosen, I'm going to want you to be a testimonial just like these people talking about it, because it's so important for me to reach others. And I want you to know the level of work that I'm going to do. I'm going to earn that testimonial. I will be back here 2 weeks after the job is done myself to check that everything I promised has happened. And at that point, I would love to get a testimonial from you. Sound like a fair thing? And just putting that in their head already raised myself. Remember we talked about everyone else showing up? Commodity. Me showing up? Niche. even in my showing up, I knew the other thing. I asked myself, what do other salespeople do so badly? One is they don't communicate well. They don't paint a good picture of what's going to go on. And the other thing is they don't even show up on time. So I was either on time or early. And that because of those things alone, I felt I won at least another 40 to 50% sales versus anyone else. I was selling $1 million in equipment sales in 1991, and it was a part-time job for me.
Wow. I think this is the first time I heard that, where you actually ask or pre-frame the testimony before you even actually do the testimonial.
Yeah, it informs them what I'm going for, how well I work, and at the end when I ask, it doesn't come out of the blue. Now, that takes practice, and they didn't do it in the house. They did it in the hands-on training center that was built to look like a house, so they got very comfortable with it.
Yeah, yeah, that's very important. And also with exactly what we're talking about earlier about AI, right? So AI has made content a commodity, right? So if you don't have the testimonials, the reviews, the branding, it's going to be even much harder today to stand out.
I absolutely agree with that. I think now I do want to get back to AI. There is some great AI, like Chirp, you know, does a great job on follow-ups. There's a lot of things that you can do to kind of catch stuff here and there. And I believe in automating anywhere you can. But here's the problem. You just start pulling automation into a million things. How do you get it all coordinated? And then it's like the best way I can describe it is if you've ever worn a three-piece suit, looking dressed sharp well, and you're going to a wedding and you have a, if you're not selling them, and you bring a gift with an envelope, you're looking in every pocket to figure out where it is. And that's the same thing when you have too many different software, CRM, things of that nature. But AI can certainly help. The best thing that you can do today is exactly the best thing from a long time ago, is create a flow chart from box to box to box, how it works. Answer is yes, go this way. Answer is no, go that way. And those charting it, flowing it out, flow charting it out, then AI or any technology is going to be super purposeful, as well as telling you, okay, what is worth and who do I find to help us do this more automatically?
That's great. And exactly what you said earlier with AI and being another tool in your toolbox and using all these tools in a smart way to actually make your business more efficient and also to potentially driving down your cost, right? Because if you have, less people,
The promise of technology has always been less people. And when I say this, the first time they rolled a mainframe into our office was, I was in college and I told my brothers we had to buy IBM. At that time they were, so that's 1971. So we're only 55 years down the road. So the point of it is they promised us that we wouldn't need as many people. Everybody was needed. We never really fired anybody. They were doing different work. Now, if it can certainly cut the headcount. I'm not saying no. And they can be more productive in different jobs and things of that nature. The big reason for it is to give the customer a seamless customer experience. That is your job. As great as branding is, where do most customers go? I was watching, do you know who's, you ever hear of Savannah Bananas, the baseball team?
No, I have not heard of them.
Yeah, so Savannah Bananas is this team. They bought a very low minor league team out in Savannah. And they didn't even name it. They had the town name it. They dress up yellow because the town picked bananas. And they put on like what a Harlem Globetrotters are. They bring in kids and they do social media posts and YouTube videos. And now they're traveling all over the country. My wife and I actually went and saw them out here in Phoenix. It is a blast because it's nothing like a regular baseball game, as we talked before, you know, commodity, niche. The guy was explaining that they never spend money on marketing. They'll do social media, YouTube, all those things. He says the customer experience and the testimonials from them, they are our missionaries. That is why everybody knows us. That's why they're on news telecasts. So the same thing applies to us. I'm not saying not to do marketing. I'm saying that the better your customer experience is, everything gets better.
Yeah, I mean, referrals are single best type of lead.
I agree. There is no better customer than a referred customer. What are you doing to make that happen is a question we haven't talked about yet. So we actively spoke to our customers and said, who else can we make happy? Who else do we know? And here's a coupon for them. If they use this coupon, it's already built in that we're going to give a discount to you on future work or free whatever it was, and they will get a break. So we worked the referral campaign. We also worked one of the things for marketing, people go, I don't have any money in marketing. Okay, well, that's why they call it guerrilla marketing. I knocked on doors. I put out lawn signs. I, you know, participated in a local town fair. We put something at a railroad station that we donated. There's a lot of ways to get things to do. And so not having money is to me not an excuse for marketing. Marketing dollars gives you options, no question about it. But having said that, guerrilla marketing does work. There's a lot of things that you can do either at low cost or no cost. So there's no excuse.
Yeah. And so I'm just curious about this. You said the referrals. So what percentage of your customers should be referrals? Is that like a number you look at?
Actually, we looked, as far as grading the KPIs on our service techs, we looked for a certain percentage of five-star reviews. That was really kind of, you know, in our case, five-star reviews, which came along as I was leaving Google and the rest of it, but all my customers had it. Years ago, this is ancient, so hang in and try not to laugh too hard. If you're on the road, try not to drive off. But I had gone to, I've gone to Nextdoor, and they talked about the importance of getting customer testimonials and letter. This was the day of writing letters. I pulled my union field supervisors. There were four of them. I had bought a book about 1,001 ways to reward the company. And so I had spoken to my dad and my brothers about, I need money to give for going above. And the three of them looked at me and go, well, that's their job. And I said, are you happy with what's going on? They go, no, we're not. I said, well, then let me try rewards for above. So I explained, I need you four guys to go through this book. Here's how much money I have. Figure out the rewards. And then I want you to give me an objective way to prove that they have earned it. So I come back in. I'm thinking they want more money or more time off as the big reward. Wrong. They wanted to go to more specialized training, and they wanted more high-tech tools. Go figure that one. I never would have guessed that. And then I said, that's great. What's the way that we're going to know it's objective? He goes, you know how you love testimonials? We're going to get customers to write a letter and send them in to you. I had 25 techs, and these guys were pretty New York. They were happy to tell me to my face things I didn't want to hear. And a lot of guys were grousing, I'm not going to be part of that program. I'm not going to do this and the rest of it. Put a big cork bulletin board, and I started to put the letters up that came in. And guess who was staring at those things? The guys who said they would never participate. And they were trying to get their testimonials. I had to rotate it constantly because it was filling up so fast. And so the point of this is, when you tell me you can't get a Google five-star review and get a customer to post with your phone, come on, it's not that hard.
No excuses. I mean, I've had that happen before, fortunately, where I ask clients to, hey, as part of the process of helping your business, getting reviews is extremely important, especially as a local service provider, right? That's what you are, right? So if there's one thing you want every contractor listening to walk away about marketing systems and I, what's a one big takeaway that you want them to have?
I think, you know, what I would say is marketing plan in your head is as worthless as it can be. A marketing plan in writing done right, of course, is better, but anything that you put down is better than nothing. And then understand that you are as an owner, you are the marketing manager. Now, of course, my programs have all the boxes, and it has marketing manager as one of them, and it has a manual to cover that. This isn't a thing that you need to do if you don't want to, but the point of it is you still need that marketing plan, like I've talked about before, to really get your marketing moving in the right direction. And that is systematically. It isn't some magic person that makes it all work.
Yeah. Where do people find you?
People will find me. The best place is to go to my website, number7powercontractor.com. You go to my blogs. I have a lot of stuff, not just on marketing, but sales, operations, staffing, sales, a lot of free content. I have a jumpstart guide. If you sign up to opt in, you'll get the jumpstart guide for free. It's a really good way. It also says my products, which is my book, which is also in Audible. So if you're riding in your truck and you want to get better at the seven powers, this is the way to start it. It's a really thin book. I'm dyslexic. I'm not a great reader. It's made to be read in 2 to 4 hours, but it's made to be read over and over again or listened to over and over again. And then there are two programs. There's the operating manual program with the box work charts and the manual I talked about here today. And it's all there. And then what builds on it is staffing. So if you want to have a pipeline of your own techs instead of industry retreads, that is the way to do it.
Yeah. And I highly recommend you get his content. Is amazing. He's worked with actually some of the most successful contractors you guys have probably heard of. He's actually the man behind the scenes a lot of cases. So you've probably heard of some of these contractors you work with. So I highly recommend you check out his information, check out his stuff. And Al, I really want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I always appreciate sharing. You know, I've been where you guys are. The only shame is staying where you are. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt your family. It's not worth it. You're going to put in the effort. You got to strive for what I said, which is I wish you less stress and more success.
Awesome. Thank you, Al. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.